When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety and to our series, The Truth About Sober Dating, Sex, and Relationships, where we ask our guests 10 burning questions about dating. And today we have Allie. So Allie, tell us your relationship status and a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I have been with my husband, Carlos. We actually just realized we met 20 years ago at a bar, and we've been married since 2011. So it'll be 14 years in the summer. So we were together for about 6 years, I think, before we got married. I met him when I was 26, he was 25. And today we both live in Pittsburgh, which is where I'm from. We have our son, Essa, who is 5 and a half. And, the work I do in the world is I have a body of work called Truce with Food and Why Am I Eating This Now? And it is really a holistic look at why people turn to food. So a lot of people who come to me have become sober from alcohol, drugs, whatever, and food was their original issue, or it has become one since becoming sober.
Wow. Okay. So I think what we'll do is we're going to tweak some of our questions specifically for food stuff. So okay. Do you remember what it was like dating when you had like food issues?
Oh, yes.
What was it like?
Well, I thought it was going to be easier once I lost weight. And I also thought that the type of person that I would want to be with, I couldn't find until I lost a certain amount of weight.
And so what did you do?
Yes. So one of the first mindset shifts that I had to have was, I have to think about, what do I like in somebody? And I really didn't know. So rather than going on every date being like, and again, this was in my 20s. I think a lot of people, we unconsciously come into a date being like, are they going to like me? Like bracing for rejection, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, wait, I have to actually figure out what I like and want in someone. Like I have a say in this. So that was the first mental shift that was like, I have to get out there and figure this out for myself. Like being thin or is not going to solve for me knowing relationship preferences, right?
Yes. Yeah. When you were on a date, did you find it hard to like order food, and were you stressed about what to get and how to eat on a date?
Yes. Oh, of course. Right. You want to do it. Look healthy, look like you were disciplined and in control of your food. So that was definitely, and I was actually never really a drinker because I always wanted to save my calories. So you never got dessert, you like no appetizer, right? It was just like, and then making sure nothing was in your teeth.
Yeah. Okay. So you've gone through this sort of like healing journey, right? With food. What is a green flag that you think we should look for now that you wouldn't have noticed before? When you were still struggling, what is a green flag you would look for in a partner?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. All of the way that I approached dating, that was before I had gone through my healing journey. And actually, one of the biggest pieces of my healing journey was meeting my husband, Carlos, who I was attracted to, who's an amazing man and person. And it was when I was at a higher weight. So there was something very much like, oh, okay, this is totally breaking apart this belief that like someone that you'd actually be attracted to and want to be with cares about your weight as much as you do. So that was like, so I think that's a, green flag is really, is there chemistry beyond, because looks fade. I mean, we're both in our 40s now. Like, we do not look the same. And again, it doesn't mean you don't want to be physically attracted to someone. But I, I'm not a relationship counselor, but I remember reading once someone's, a relationship counselor saying, one of the biggest ways that the reasons people are attracted to people is because of familiarity. So it's like, oh, I don't want to date my father. I don't want to date my mother. But then you end up dating them. And so realizing that physical attraction is a small piece of the puzzle. And it's really, am I familiar with these dynamics back and forth? Was so that's kind of not a green flag, but that was something that I was, that now that I know, it's like, oh, this is why, I don't know. I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but
no, it makes sense.
Yeah. So I think the green flags are they interested in you? Like an interested in conversation
versus curious.
Yeah. And that's what I mean by that attraction. Like it's not just physical. And Carlos and I met, he was living in DC. I was living in Philly. And this was before Skype. This was before like Zoom texting. And so our relationship started long distance and on the phone. And so there was a lot of intellectual chemistry there that was important. So to me, that's a green flag of like, do you guys actually get along beyond just like the physical attraction? And is that person genuinely interested in you?
Yeah. What about a red flag that you used to ignore that you think would be a deal breaker now? I like look back at my ex and I think he was just like a walking red flag. I just can't believe I didn't know this.
Yeah. Well, I think the red flag for me was I think it came from me actually. It was like wanting to talk about sports because I thought, I mean, I actually do love sports, but like, oh my God, how do I talk about what I assume this person wants to talk about, right? Yeah. And it was like sport. It was like very traditional male things. And Carlos actually doesn't even like sports. Like I do. And it's just kind of funny. So I think the red flag sometimes comes from ourselves of, okay, this is the direction I think this conversation needs to go, even though I'm not even interested in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I actually heard something that was, you don't fall in love with the person, you fall in love with who you are when you're with that person. And so I don't think the best version of me is picking up somebody else's interests. That's not a comfortable place to live, right? And so that isn't the best version. So yeah, I think that is a red flag. And I totally didn't know that before.
Yeah. I think the other thing that is when someone doesn't offer a lot, and I'm not saying people can't be shy or take time to warm up, but when someone doesn't offer a lot, it's really easy to think you're attracted to them when you're attracted to the idea of them. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I'm thinking in high school how many boys I had crushes on, and I was like, I like them. But it was because they were aloof and there was no need for real emotional intimacy, not physical intimacy, right? But it's like, oh, I think I like you because of the idea I have about you, but I also like the distance because real emotional intimacy feels really, and physical intimacy too, but emotional intimacy can feel really vulnerable, right? That's why relationships are hard, is the opening up emotionally and sharing.
Yeah, and so somebody, the less emotionally available they are, the more you can sort of project.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we think, oh, I'll change that. So I think, and again, I think that's a red flag too, of thinking that you need to change this person.
What's a go-to sober date activity? So a date that's not, an activity that's not revolving around drinking.
Yeah. Oh, I'm all about activities that get both people outside of their comfort zone. So not everyone feels awkward. Like one person's like, I love hiking and I'm taking you on this. But I just love the outdoors and I think they're very calming. So if you're nervous, I think something like hiking or walking or something that you want to do with that person like forevermore and see if that jives, you know, not forevermore, but like, you know, Carlos and I both like to like go out and hike, right? It's like, so that's nice that we, that's something ultimately that we can, that we did back in the day, and we still will go take walks together.
That actually brings me to my next question, which is about limits. And so, so this is interesting. So I had a friend who had, was talking to a guy, she really liked him, like over text and everything. And then she found out he was morbidly obese, right? And I remember talking to her, and at first I was like, well, just go out with him. She's like, yeah, but we don't have the same interest. She's like, I like to go for a walk with my dog. I like to go hiking. I don't think that's something he's going to be able to do. So I don't know if we're compatible. So what do you think about that compatibility between fitness, like food choices? Like, for example, I'm vegetarian. I'm okay with dating somebody who eats a little bit of meat, but I don't want to date somebody who eats meat for every meal, right?
Yeah.
Or I don't want to date somebody who drinks a lot. So what do you, what is your comfort level with that?
I think that's a great question, because I think, again, the this is the question of how are we defining attraction, right? I think when I was dating in my late teens and 20s, you have a different idea of what compatibility is, like versus in your 40s and 50s, which is, you know, or 30s. It's like, you may want stability. You just, you may want more of a friend. Again, there can be romantic attraction there. But for me, I'm someone who's really physically active. Like, I just like to do that. I like to do that with my kid. He loves basketball. I'm so excited. He likes sports. And I'm also someone who, because I had cancer as a teenager, I carry some hypochondriacness, right? Carlos and I have had some stuff, because he has a chronic health condition. And for me, it's not his food. It's like the amount of coffee he drinks on an empty stomach is not how. And I'm like, I don't want to be a wellness widow.
Do you remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took it myself, and the results blew my mind. I found out I was actually 39 years old biologically, while I'm 46 chronologically. But what was really eye-opening were the areas where I was on the borderline, like my blood sugar and cholesterol, and True Diagnostic gave natural recommendations to lower both of those. It matters, because research shows that if your biological age is even just 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 50%. But the good news is, almost 90% of biological aging is in your hands. It's driven by things like your lifestyle, your habits, and your environment. The True Age Test didn't just give me a number. It showed how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging. And that was also eye-opening. I discovered that my brain is biologically younger, but my lungs need improvement. So I started doing some type of cardio daily. And honestly, I feel so much better knowing how my systems are aging, so I can do something about it. The test itself was so easy and convenient. I did it from home. There was no doctor, no needle, just a quick, painless finger prick. So you send off that tiny sample in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and health. It's fast and hassle-free. So if you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to True Diagnostic and use my code CIS2025 to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use CIS2025 at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums, and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Which is, you know, in at 50, 60, you aren't feeling so well because you haven't done what you can do to take care of your condition, or that you end up dying early, right? And again, some of that is my own stuff. So I have to look at like, okay, he's technically healthy except for this, you know, chronic health condition that you wouldn't even know. It doesn't limit him in any ways. But I do think there can be, like, I have a strong value of health, and that's never going away because You know, I grew up in a family that valued health. I had cancer as a teenager. This is the work that I do. Now, how we define health, it's for me, it's much more beyond weight, but there has to be some sort of, like Carlos eats, we eat healthy. We both have the same value of health around how we raise our son. He lets me take the lead because he's like, you know so much. But if he was not active and wanted to eat fast food, we wouldn't be enjoying the same things.
I think it's interesting that when you define it as a value, it actually feels a lot better, because I remember having the conversation with my friend and it felt shitty to be like, maybe you shouldn't go out with the morbidly obese guy. It felt like it was just based on looks, or it felt like something that was judgmental. But you're right, it's a value. Like, we just value different things. I'm not judging you. It's just that if we're going to have a relationship, our values are different.
Yeah. And in that situation, I do think it would be courtesy to say, like, hey, don't assume he doesn't like to walk with you, right? That's the other thing is, and this is where, right, unconscious bias comes in, assuming that people who are obese or overweight aren't active, aren't healthy. Sometimes the people who are overweight and obese are trying the most, right? Mm-hmm. People who are thin don't necessarily value health. They often think they don't need to try. And then they're often some of the, they're called tofies, you know, thin on the outside, fat on the inside. They're some of the first people to die as they age because they have so much inflammation and they didn't think that they had it to worry because their weight was never an issue. So that's why we have to, like, really, if we may value health, but how are we defining that? And it has to be beyond weight, I think, is where that comes.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. There are people that present as what we think of as healthy, but yeah, aren't, right? Don't share that same value.
Yeah. But
yeah. There's a lot of people that drink. Like, when I was drinking, I was like a really great weight because I was like just drinking, getting no other nutrition.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, yeah, Carlos doesn't drink and I don't either. So it's like that's just not even an option on the table now of like, what are we going to go out and do? And I love that because I've never really been a drinker. He was for a while, but he doesn't drink anymore. And it's like, oh, we have that in common now. So even when we were just at a bat mitzvah and Carlos is like, oh my God, if I was still drinking, I'd have energy to stay out. And I'm like, I am so tired.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, so do you just want to go home a little early? I mean, we were having a great time, but I was exhausted, you know, and it was like, oh, we both get to go home and like sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay. Who do you call, or who would have you called after a first date to dish, or who do you call to vent to after a fight with your partner?
Oh, after a fight with Carlos, I talk to my sister because my sister and Carlos are very similar, but they're also very different. And she's like such a champion of me, right? So, and she loves him. So when I just want someone to vent and all that stuff, right, I call her. But I think for people who are dating, I think you need someone who can listen to you, understand what your relationship kryptonite is. I have a friend who tends to be attracted to emotionally unavailable men, right? And she knows where it comes from. And so I will often listen to her because it's hard to break these patterns, right? Again, attraction is often what's familiar, not based on looks. And then say to her, like, okay, like, what do you, remind her, right? I'm saying you need someone who'll be like, what do you want from a relationship? What's improvement over the last time of a date that you went on, right? Someone who can help you kind of pull out your blind spots. And remind you of what you deserve. Because I think, and this happens a lot with food stuff, the reason people turn to food is when they feel emotionally unsafe in some way. And part of what I work on with clients is you need to find a compassionate, like, soft place to land where you can rest with what you're feeling, someone who's not going to judge you, but also someone who's going to help you figure out, like, what's on your side of the street that needs cleaned up. So I think... Yeah. I think I also have to find people like that who aren't my sister.
Yeah, I'm lucky. So I have two sister-in-laws, and one, we call her the apologizer because she still apologizes for my ex-husband. And I appreciate the perspective, but it's not always helpful. So, and then I have my other sister-in-law, who, you know, is a therapist. So she's really rough. And so it's kind of nice to have both. So I have the apologizer, and I will go to her when I know I'm working off of an insecurity or something. And so that is helpful. But when I have a question about whether or not something was like a red flag, I go to my therapist, sister-in-law.
That's a great example. Yeah, it's like, I know what I need. And yeah. So this person can give me this, this person can give me that. But I think all of us, because dating, like the other big mindset shift I had to have is like, I thought I was like bad at dating because I had not dated a ton and I had been in a corporate job where I was flying all over the world. And so it was like not conducive to dating. And here I am in my mid-20s thinking my life is over because I haven't found someone yet, right? It's like, oh God. Yeah. But it's like, okay, dating is just awkward. No one's good or bad at it. Maybe some people like it more than others, but it's just awkward, right? I think so. I don't know anyone who's been like, dating's so fun.
I have a friend who loves dating and she...
You need to have her on this podcast.
Oh my God. She's been seeing somebody, but she used to go on 2-3 dates a week. Wow. And I was like, I would die. Like, I'd just be dead. Like, I would just like, I would not be able to function. Like, I could not do it. Meet 2-3 new people a week.
Yeah. Maybe she also wanted friends. I mean, I think that's the other thing is like.
It was her social life, partly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the other thing that if I were to have to go out dating again and what I would shifting is I think at least in America, I know you're American and Canadian, but, and I think Canada is probably very similar, but again, this was my perspective, but in my late teens, early 20s, it was like, I put this idea of marriage as like this relationship has to be everything, right? Versus being like, now I'm like, oh my God, this person cannot be everything for you. That's not fair to them. It's not fair to you. Like you need your girlfriends. Like for me, my girlfriends have like, this has actually been my New Year's resolution the past 2 years. I'm getting better at it, but like re-engaging with those relationships because those are equally as important. And so I think that's, I don't know. That's just another mindset shift I've had as I've aged is just been like, oh my God, okay, this person, yeah, they need to have your back and they need to be like your person and stuff, especially if you're going to raise kids together or blend families, but also they can't be everything and you can't be everything for them. And that's not, that's like a Disney fairy tale and Disney's really, it's like the women are always getting rescued. That's just not, that's not what it's about.
Actually, that is perfect for my next question, which is, I used to think love was blank. Now I know it's blank.
Oh, yes. I used to think love was, well, I grew up in the 80s and 90s with lots of codependent love songs. So I used to think love was someone just thinking that I was the greatest and would just love and adore me no matter what, put me on a pedestal. Now I think love is someone that you pick who you're both going to stick around and work out your core wounds together and individuate into wholeness.
My God. Actually, you brought up my last question. If your love life had a playlist, what's the first track?
Oh God. Well, the song that we danced to at our wedding was Jason Mraz, Lucky. And I do really still feel that way about Carlos. I mean, our relationship blew up after having a child. Like we had 3 fights, right? We had him in 2019. Yeah. We were together 14 years before we had our son and we had like 2 or 3 fights. We were very independent. And then after having him, our relationship just, you know, Esther Perel talks about you'll have like 3 different marriages in your lifetime or partnerships. Yeah. And sometimes they're with the same people. And he is the person that I'm just lucky that we're working through all the kind of the new relationship and marriage we'll have. He's so supportive of me. I try to be really supportive of him. And yeah. And we share domestic duties. I'm really lucky. And so I think that would be it. Lucky.
Oh, I love that. And I love that relationships change and it could be with the same partner or it might not be.
It might not. And that's okay. Yeah. I mean, people used to die at 30. Like they,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Ever after was like 10 years.
Yeah. No, I agree there. Yeah. That was the basis of like marriage and monogamy. Was like, right. Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Well, thank you so much, Allie. This was so fun. I got so much good advice from you.
Well, thanks for doing this, Sonia. And be brave out there, people. It's a jungle, but you got this.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.